AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
On Pilot TV this week, we're taking on the police with Sheridan Smith in I Fought the Law on ITV1, dusting Eve Miles' sideboards in The Guest on BBC1, and getting ready to rock with the runarounds on Prime Video. Plus, Donal Gleeson joins us on the show to talk Office spin-off The Paper on Sky. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is broadly back to normal this week, except it's not really, is it? Because I'm dialing in from the Sunshine State here in Florida. We have no idea what's going on with the studio. We've had technical difficulties, and we now have, looks at clock, 46 minutes to complete this recording.
Some would say that's the optimum time the podcast should last.
This may be the best episode of Pilot, because we're going to be laser-focused. There'll be no digressions, no rambling. It'll just be, you know, spot on. Super professional. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, Kay Ribeiro is literally here. I'm looking at her face on FaceTime. She is in the studio.
Boydie is off camera,
I think, cursing my name.
Yeah.
How are we feeling? We good?
The temperatures run a little hot in the studio, so we've been trying to figure this out. I mean, yeah, tempers have been frayed. But we're here. We are all here. James remotely.
As long as you're having a nice time there in Florida, James, that's all
okay,
that matters.
Okay, let's not start this again. Listen, he's allowed to have a break.
Oh, thank you, Boydie. No, I am. I'm having a lovely time. Yeah. I actually haven't done anything apart from sleep, because I arrived late last night and then woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I've really just been pottering around the hotel room all morning.
Are you staying in a Disney
this
hotel?
This is a good thing, because I had it's not a Disney hotel, it's a Universal.
Universal Hotel. Sorry, I get confused.
Universal Studios. I'm at for
parks.
Halloween Horror Nights.
Of course.
And there's a Fallout themed horror house this year. So I'm quite looking forward to that. That's the sort of most pilot adjacent property they've got.
Wait a minute. So is this the trip that you go on where we then get subjected to a video of you doing karaoke?
Yes. It's that one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh my God, amazing. Yeah. I mean, that is going to be.
It's TBC whether that will actually happen.
No, well, listen, if you're putting us through this excruciating remote record, then we will need that kind of content.
I mean, that's fair. I should say to everyone listening, I'm on, I reckon, about a 2-second delay as I'm listening to it. So there's going to be loads of crosstalk and it's going to be a complete shambles. But what I will tell you is that I had a 9-hour flight here, and I used that flight well, because I finally managed to watch, yes, The Pit.
Because
The Pit is available on Virgin Atlantic flights, and I watched it on the way to Florida, and I can confirm it is just as excellent as everyone says, although it is exceptionally stressful viewing. So it's like ER meets 24. Essentially, because the entire show is set in real time. And it's just like, so the first episode is like 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., you know, and it's just full on ER mayhem. It is super stressful. It's incredibly gnarly, like in terms of, like, I guess you'd call it body horror, but just the medical procedural detail is, there are bits where I was like, bluh, bluh, I'm going to put my meal aside while I watch this
you
person
don't be able to do with that,
have their guy. Leg amputated. Yeah, it's quite a lot. Do you know what? Of all the things, and there's someone who's got half a leg missing. There's all kinds of the stomach gets cracked open. And the thing that made me most squeamish is a guy gets like a blood blister. Like one of the gurneys falls on his finger, and so he gets.
Is
a blood
that the thing? That is
so
ridiculous.
He's got swelling underneath his nail, and so they have to drill into the top of his fingernail to the nail bit to release the pressure. And that's the thing that made me the most squeamish.
That is bonkers. Yeah. Of all the things, that is the thing that gets you. The thing that's most likely that could happen to you, by the way.
Yeah. 100%, that's probably why it was very relatable. But genuine, it's so good. Noah Wiley is fantastic in it. In fact, everyone's really good in it as well. I'm really loving it. I'm loving the discord he's having with the head of the hospital. I haven't seen all of it. I'm going to finish the rest of it on the way, on the flight back. But I am furious about this. So finally, I have seen The Pit. I do not know when anyone else is going to get to see it, because we still have no news on when it is coming to wherever it's coming to in the UK.
Listen, I know the pilot podcast budget is huge. Do you think you can get it signed off that I can get a flight somewhere just so I can watch it? That's how it works,
know, that's
right?
Maybe what we should be doing now. Instead of asking for screeners, yeah, we'll just book flights so we
to
can
Fiji.
Watch the shows on planes, places. Yeah, 100%. Book a flight to Fiji. We can absolutely get through all of the pier. There's like 16 episodes. Like, it's a lot. But yeah, it's good stuff. But that's not the only thing I've watched. There are many, many other things, and I need to rattle through them. So first of all, I need to tell you why you're also wrong about Peacemaker, because it's fantastic. I've watched, I think, 6 episodes of Peacemaker. It is so good. It's not, I will
is
grant
it,
you, as good as season one. Yes, it is.
James,
I
do
think,
you find it funny, honestly?
Before, I think John Cena... Yes, and that's the thing is, I think John Cena is a revelation. I think as a comedian, he is just gifted. Sort of as a physical comedian, as a just a general comedian, because he's like a wrestler. He knows he's absurd. He doesn't take himself seriously, and he has absolutely no qualms about setting himself up. And I think of all of the wrestlers turned actors, he is by far the best. Like Dave Bautista, got a lot of time for. You know, The Rock, also good as well. Hulk Hogan, meh. But... You know,
don't come for the Hulk.
He is so funny. Even when he did Trainwreck, you know, he was really funny in that. But I think he's fantastic in Peacemaker. I really enjoy the show. I think it's great. I know a lot of DC purists don't love the slightly anarchic, very James Gunn tone to it. But yeah, I think it's great. And I was very, very distraught listening to you guys review it wrongly in my absence.
Well, it's a bit like when you reviewed Superman wrongly, talking of James Gunn. So, you know. Opinions differ.
We all have our missteps, I suppose. But yes, okay, other things I've seen. So I finished The Sandman season 2 as well. And I think I alluded to this a little bit on the live show, but I really enjoyed The Sandman. I loved season 1. I enjoyed season 2. I was never bored. It's nowhere near as good as season 1. And I think it's not as focused. It's very mopey. It's like, it's really kind of like dour and a little bit downbeat. And I think that sort of, that did drag a little bit towards the end. I thought the sort of final sort of epilogue episode, the high cost of living, the death-centric one with Kirby Hal-Baptiste, I didn't like that. I thought that was a missed opportunity as well. Because you think, okay, this will be something different. And I guess it is, but it also wasn't great. So a bit disappointed by Sandman season 2. I have also been watching, as you know, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. But the thing I wanted to bring up was the most recent episode of that, which I think is called What is the Federation? But anyway, Boydie, you'd absolutely hate it. It uses that incredibly hoary old trope of using the kind of faux documentary format.
Oh,
and I know that obviously Strange New Worlds specializes in switching up its formats, you know, from, you know, musicals to comedy to animations. They've got a puppet one coming up. And clearly they'd trying something new because they want to do something new every episode. But I think this documentary format, stuff like The Office aside, you know, when a show's built around it, slightly different. But using this as a one-off device, I think rarely works. Like The X-Files did it badly. The worst episode of The West Wing was one of these as well. All
famously.
Access. And it was just like that. It was just painful. So painful. It's a really interesting idea as well, which is the idea of, is the Federation a force for good, or is the Federation actually just empire building? You know, are they fascist? That's an interesting question. But then to explore it through this incredibly shit documentary created by what I can only assume is the galaxy's worst documentarian. It was just, honestly, I wanted to throw things at the
problem
screen.
Is,
I wanted to set phases to something else.
The problem is when it always looks fake, doesn't it? There's something about it. It never quite rings true when you try to make your own version of a fly on the wall documentary. It's just stupid.
100%. So yeah, not impressed by that at all. So while I love Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and while I applaud that they take big swings, please never do that again.
Yeah, I'm sure they're listening.
Oh, they're definitely
they'll
I'm
take sure you on board. They'll take you on board.
I think so.
Yeah.
Anyway, what have you guys been watching?
So I have been watching the first episode of Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams Ultimate Test. Now, anyone who listens to this regularly will know what Boyd's putting
soon.
A face.
Coming soon.
It's coming soon to BBC One.
Just making sure that people know it's not on yet.
7th of September.
Correct.
It's a preview I was watching. And anyone who listens to this regularly will know that I'm a big fan of Freddie. And I've loved his previous two series and his documentaries. And so this series, whereas last series 2, he took his team, his Preston team, cricket team, to India for a tour. This time round, he's gone even bigger, and he wants to create a boys' team in, I think it's Liverpool and Manchester, and also a girls' team. And I watched the first episode today, and I just love it. Like, he's up against it because, you know, obviously these young kids in deprived areas aren't necessarily thinking cricket's for them because they're like, it's for toffs. They don't give a shit, basically. But all credit to him, he completely perseveres. And he's having some positive results in that people are signing up to just give it a go. I love Freddie, and I would follow him into battle, and I just think he's doing a brilliant, brilliant thing.
So. You should join one of his women's cricket teams.
Boyd, you're sort of saying that as a bit of a joke. I will have you know, I was very, and I know it's not the same for anyone writes in, I was quite good at rounders at school. And I reckon... I'm better than you.
I'm sure you are, Kate.
It's getting very childish, isn't it?
I'm willing to admit that you're probably better at rounders than me. Yes.
Yeah, and I know I'd give, that's the thing, if I can't do it, I'll give it a good go and I'll get competitive. So I would love to, Freddie, I'm here.
Listen, kudos,
I'm ready for the call up.
Kudos to whoever commissioned you to write about this Freddie Flintoff documentary. That's what.
Oh, forget about it. Okay, so I wrote it for Heat. Anyway, Freddie is a legend. Everyone should tune in on the 7th of September for that. And then the other thing I've been watching is I've watched the first episode of The Great British Bake Off, Channel 4 again. Boyd. Again, Boyd commissioned me, so he just wants to hunt a little bit of glory for that. Fantastic new batch of bakers and challenges this time round. And the final thing, I'm not going to go into that because obviously I'll get told off. A sniper from the tent will come and take me out because obviously it's top secret till it comes out.
I thought you meant James was going to kill you, James, the sniper in the tent.
No, James loved the Bake Off.
No, the only thing reason I struggled to talk about this is I just kept triggered by it because of the time that I was egregiously robbed by Big Tom Davis of my rightful place as the best baker at the Pilot TV Bake Off with my lemon drizzle cake.
Listen.
And I also realised that you had Kay's cookies, Boydie's brownies, and James's lemon drizzle cake. So I let the side down with the alliteration.
Yeah,
well, why do you think he lost? Mm. He was like, can't give it to that loser if he can't even do it. If he can't even.
Should have been James's jam sponge.
Yes, indeed. So everyone should tune into Bake Off. And then the final thing I have been watching is Educating Yorkshire. Boy, did you commission me to do that? I can't remember.
I meant to. Whether I actually did or not, I can't remember.
Okay. Well, let's give you the credit anyway. It's the second series follow-up. It's like 12 years on. They're back at Thornhill Community Academy in Yorkshire. They're basically documenting the modern problems facing the teachers and pupils there again. And the brilliant Mr. Burton, who, if you recall from the first series, Boyd was the inspiring English teacher who helped that young, I can't remember the student's name, with a stammer, he helped him overcome it. He is back and he's now head teacher and he's doing brilliant things. So I would highly recommend everyone tunes in to watch that. That's on Channel 4. Boyd might have a date or he might not, if he's on his toes.
It's on Sunday on Channel 4, actually. I do have that date, whatever the date is, on Sunday coming up. Yeah, 8 o'clock, I believe.
Yes, correct. Actually, no, you're not incorrect. It's 10 o'clock.
It's absolutely not 10 o'clock, Kate.
Really?
Yeah. Why would you put Education Yorkshire, a show about a school with pupils, on at 10 o'clock? I mean, where'd you get that from?
It sounds post-watershed to me.
Yeah. Maybe what you know.
Maybe it was a repeat I looked at. Okay, fine.
No, it's just on Sunday, 31st of August, 8 o'clock, 2025.
I did think it was weird when I wrote that down. Okay.
Are you sure you just haven't fantasised about it?
Maybe it's the late version of what the teachers get up to on a Friday night after school.
Oh, steady.
No, not like that.
Baywatch Nights.
No, not... Don't be obscene. I meant like having a drink down the pub. Anyway, let's move on. Skip over my 10 o'clock faux pas. Boydo, what have you been watching?
Thanks for asking. I have been watching Marc Maron.
Oh, yeah.
Marc Maron of...
What the fuck?
Exactly. Of WTF podcast fame. One of the pioneers of the podcast form, I think it's safe to say. He's giving up... I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. He's giving up WTF soon. He's winding it down. But he's got a stand-up special on Sky Comedy, slash Now, and you can get it on demand. And it's called Panicked. And it's a timely reminder of just how good Marc Maron is as a comedian. And I think he does a kind of, if you listen to WTF, he does like a 10-15 minute intro pretty much every episode, in which he talks about stuff that's bothering him, or, you know, issues he wants to talk about, Donald Trump, how Donald Trump is ruining our lives, etc. So if you're a fan of those kind of 10-15 minute intros that he does, this kind of hour-long special you will love, because it's kind of like, it's a properly crafted hour of stand-up. And he's just a really good writer of comedy material, which is personal to him. And he very much is, he's in the school. I think stand-ups can be divided into two groups. People like Jerry Seinfeld, who's just completely, there's no particular deep meaning to what he's saying. He's not talking about his personal life. He's just talking about stuff that he's observed on a day-to-day, the trivia of day-to-day life. And then there's comedians like Marc Maron, who very much is, I'm showing you my, bearing my soul in the form of stand-up comedy, but I am saying stuff that's important to me and it's about me and my life. He talks about how his partner died a few years ago, which in a really tragic thing. He talks about that in his last stand-up special. And in this one, he talks about the wildfires in LA.
Oh, yeah.
Because he lives in LA.
What did he say?
It's really interesting. There's a whole big chunk of it is about how he ended up trying to, mostly worried about saving his cats. He's got three cats. And he was like really worried about them more than anything. And also worried about dying and his house burning down, etc. It all ended up fine. He wasn't really ever in danger, his particular, where he lives, where his house particularly. But there's loads of great stuff about he's sitting there in his car with the cats, just thinking, what am I going to do? What should I do? How do I keep them safe, etc.? And he's just incredibly engaging, and it's all his whole persona is. He's kind of like Larry David. He's got the kind of middle age, well, later than middle age, kind of old Jewish white guy spiel that, of course, I identify with as an old Jewish white guy, but slightly more kind of heartfelt, I guess. Than Larry David, who's very much up there for the laughs. Anyway, I thought it was fantastic. If you're a Marc Maron fan, Panicked on Sky.
It's
aired last Friday on the linear channel, but it's there to watch whenever you want.
Oh, cool.
On demand, yeah.
I was just going to make up a fake time as I did for Educate Yorkshire.
Don't pretend that it needs a particular time. Yeah, this could be not 10 o'clock. That would have made sense.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, anyway, God. I've also watched in things that are coming up on TV that haven't actually been on yet, which is, you know, as Kate did, I watched Mitchell and Webb Are Not Helping, which is the new sketch show from David Mitchell and Robert Webb of Mitchell and Webb past sketch shows they did for the BBC, that Mitchell and Webb look. I think they did two or three series. And this is a show in which they are centre stage, of course, but they actually have a troupe, if you like, of younger, more up-and-coming comedians who have helped.
Well, that's
nice. Yeah. I think it was Channel 4's idea. They were like, you know, if we just get Mitchell and Webb back, you know, after, what, probably 10, 15 years since they did the last sketch show, then that's a bit kind of unadventurous. So we'll say, yeah, but let's put a new young cast in. K.L. Smith-Bino, isn't it, who we love, who isn't really that up-and-coming. I mean, he's fairly established. He was in the Kershaw when I went on my my set visit, and I was sitting next to him on the Sunday.
When you had your espadrille
as
on.
As an extra next to Kyle Smith-Bino. And he's also in Ghosts and lots of stuff. Yeah, you
of
know.
Of course,
yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, I thought, the thing that people always say about sketch shows is it's obviously hit and miss. Obviously it's hit and miss because you get, you know what, 7, 8, 9 sketches per episode, and why are you not necessarily going to love all of them. But I thought the hit rate of this show was really high. And there's a great sketch about the two warring Prince Andrew dramas. ITV is doing a documentary about the creation of the two warring Prince Andrew dramas. Do you remember that there were the two?
Yeah, different? Yeah.
And it's really funny. Really, really funny idea. But the funniest bits are, there's bits set in an airport security lane where people are just arriving and they're just being treated like shit by the security people. And they're like, take your belt off. Don't take your belt off. Why are you undressing? And they're honestly, I was laughing out loud. And I very rarely laugh out loud at anything, even right,
yeah.
comedy that I love.
I don't think I've ever seen your lips move into a laughter shape.
And they have another a good little device they use, which is they have a sketch and then they'll have a writer's room showing you the writer's room talking about the sketch they've just done.
Oh, wow.
And it sounds quite wanky and self-indulgent, but it's actually really
clever. Does it take you out of it, though?
It does, but in a good way.
Okay.
So you see a sketch, there's one sketch, and you sit there thinking, oh, this is funny, but I'm not sure it quite works. And then they go to them going, that was funny, but I'm not sure it quite works. So it kind of undermines.
Very meta.
It is very meta. I really liked it. Some people will probably take against it, to be fair.
Okay.
But I thought it was a really kind of clever idea, and I thought it worked really well. And finally, I just want to mention, there's a show that's going on at the moment, live on Channel 4 of an evening at 9 o'clock, called The Jury Murder Trial.
Yes, boy.
Yes.
I've watched the first episode of
yes.
that. Hooked.
Well, I've watched two now, and it's so interesting, isn't it? This is the second series. They had the previous series, but the case in this series is particularly kind of disturbing. It's about a woman accused who did admits to killing her partner, but instead she says in self-defense because she says he was abusive and violent towards her. And it's all about people's preconceptions. You see that people, normal people are sitting in a jury, you know, obviously found by Channel 4. Channel 4 have cast them, but you see the workings of the jury and you see how some personalities can completely dominate the 12-person jury situation. And people have their own prejudices and their own
experiences of domestic violence, right,
which is very interesting, isn't it? To how that affects certain people, probably not in the ways you might expect. Mm-hmm. I thought it was fascinating. And
I would highly recommend everyone.
Yeah, it's such a brilliant idea. And in the first series, they had two different juries. If you watch it, they came up with different verdicts. In this, it's like they're recreating this real life case, albeit with changed names, etc., so not to exploit the people mm-hmm. who have really gone through this stuff. But there's one jury that they've cast, and it's all about, does this jury agree with the real jury's verdict?
I prefer having one jury.
And I think this does work better, I agree. Yes. Yeah. So that's happening at the moment on Channel 4. It's like been on Monday to Thursday this week, and it'll be on 4 online, or whatever that's called, channel4.com. That is it.
Wonderful.
James, sorry for witching.
Listen,
on
I mean,
too
James
long.
Has got one foot on the ride already. I mean, we're pretty much done, aren't we? James basically furiously just watching the clock.
I'm refusing to compromise with the shortened.
I know, very uncomfortable. Come on, give him a break.
We'll just carry on without him.
Give him a break.
It's
come
fine.
On.
I mean, you're going to have to, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Should we move on to this week's listener question?
Yes, let's.
Oh, I forgot about this.
Okay, my phone is elsewhere. Boyd, can you be the Debbie McGee to my Paul Daniels and read it out, please?
Yes. This message starts by saying, I'm an idiot K, but then carries on talking about how much you'd like to the live show, etc. And the question is, episode one of The Assassin, amazing show, but 1994, and she uses a flip phone, as in the third, I guess, right? Just took me out of it a bit. Do you or the gang have any things like that when you see something and think, A, what? And have a bit of a distraction about it. There you go. I have to say, I did glance at this and thinking, I can't remember anything that's taken me out of it. That, I mean, we've talked before about certain things that happen on shows that take you out of it, like the vomiting after a traumatic incident. Like
I've got a non-answer, but I'll give an answer.
A non-answer is better than no answer.
Okay. Well, as in, like, I've just chosen, because I also was thinking, oh, you know, we think of them as they come along, right? And we kind of mention stuff. Most recently, and it's not answering your question at all, is that we were talking about when we were doing our smoke spoiler chat, and I mentioned about the finale, which I won't give anything away, but there's a scene involving a scrunchie, and I was like, I'm not sure. Yeah, it wasn't necessarily to do with the scrunchie. It was like the outcome of a scenario. And then a scrunchie was applied. I was like, yeah, I don't know. This took the whole thing, that whole scene, I was like, I'm out. So that is my...
Yeah, you really had an issue with that scrunchie, didn't you?
Yeah.
It wasn't the scrunchie.
It wasn't... Listen, I love a scrunchie, but it was more the fact that someone was able to put a scrunchie in, let's just say that. I think you know what I'm referring to.
It was supposed to be, that scene was written so you're supposed to think she's reaching for a gun, and then when she comes up with a scrunchie and puts her hair up, it's supposed to be a gag. Like it was written as a fake out.
Yeah, I get it. I think it's more that she was...
Kay's still not on board.
No.
Do you want to know a fact? Do you want to know a flip phone fact? The very first flip phone was the Motorola StarTAC that was actually released in January 1996. So they're absolutely right. It's 2 years off. I had a Razor. Do you have a Razor, the Motorola Razor?
The clamshell. Was that
in the early noughties?
Yeah,
it was quite thin. It was nice.
Yeah, it was
a flip phone.
I just remember Marissa from the OC having a flip phone. I was really jealous of it.
Because also, like in TV, like I worked on the West Wing, like where you hung up on someone, you could just like snap it closed, and it gave it a bit of drama to hanging up, as opposed to, you know, pressing the screen. That doesn't bother me stuff. The stuff that bothers me is, that doesn't bother me stuff.
That
sorry, Dan, that's not a sentence.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me stuff. That doesn't bother me. What does bother me is computer stuff. It bothers me when I'm computers don't work that way. What are you doing?
Banging
the table.
Yeah. I'm banging the table. Sorry, I didn't realise that was coming through.
All the rules have gone out the window in terms of sound quality now that he's in Florida. He just doesn't give a shit.
I'm emphatically banging the table. Yeah, it drives me mad. Like, and the thing the things that stick most in my mind is one Sandra Bullock film from the 90s called The Net, which
legendary. Yeah.
Genuinely ridiculous.
Also very much
but
a film.
That, do you remember, also a film. So I will refer you then to season two of Spooks. So Spooks Series 1, if you remember Spooks Series 1, it's quite hard-hitting, super violent, that incredibly shocking episode with the deep fat fryer, you know. It's violent. It has a realism to it. Spooks Season 2, they dial up the daft significantly very early on in that series, and it obviously continues throughout the show's run. But there's a bit with an episode where they're doing computer stuff and Spook Season, and I remember just like gritting my teeth and like clawing at the arms of the sofa, just being like, that's not how computers work, what are you doing? It really bothered me. I can't tell you why, but it does. It drives me mad. And you know, it's little things like, you know, Independence Day when they upload a virus to an alien mothership with a Mac. It's like, in the nicest possible way, you can't get Macs to talk to PCs, let alone alien motherships. So it's just like, that kind of stuff.
Do you think we've got enough time to be talking about films? It's up to you.
Yeah.
Oh, don't even get me started on the first Mission Impossible.
No, James.
Streaming video on Navigator.
Neither of those films are on my favourites list.
Oh my gosh, that comes to something when they haven't even made his absolute favourites.
Just making that clear.
But look, genuinely, I think, you know, I get why they do it, because often like user interfaces first isn't very cinematic or doesn't look good on TV, so they make it look slick and special. But yeah, computers.
Isn't it that I was reading,
and it annoys me.
I was reading recently, and it might be a film director as well, a director was saying that they're refusing to make any shows or films or TV. I think this was a director who worked in both things, Kay, so don't be...
I'm giving the Paddington Bear hot stir.
But they were saying that they were pretty much insisting now on, they're not going to make any shows set in the present because the iPhones particularly date so quickly. Because they only change subtly.
Oh, but please. Even then, I've still got a 12.
Well, right, but even then...
Yeah, if you, that seems silly.
Yeah, if you're using an iPhone... But if you think, because there's the new phones that fold out, don't they? That Channel 4, that Apple about to do their own version of the folding out phone.
I'm not into that.
Well, so, we don't know that. They haven't announced it.
Well, no, so but that's what everyone says in the tech world, don't they? Anyway, you, all right, Mr. Apple. Anyway, what I'm saying is, this director was saying, it just looks too dated, so they're only wanting to do period things in the past.
That's bananas.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite interesting, that the thing that dates so much is kind of quite current tech.
I just think it's ridiculous because not everyone has updated tech all the time. I mean, I'm a perfect example of that. So I think it's, yeah.
Yes, fair enough.
Silly.
Okay, it's stupid. I don't know why I brought it up in the first place.
Well, go and stand in that corner for a bit and have time out.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Shall we move on to news?
Please, God.
Before we move on to news, we should move on to this week's guest.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And it is none other than Mr. Donal Gleeson, a man who has long had to put up with Boydie's football-based trolling, for which we at Pilot TV extend our heartfelt apologies. Yes. He's back on our screens this week in The Paper, which is on Sky, and it's a spin-off of The US Office. This one focuses on a declining newspaper. Is there any other kind? Called The Toledo Truth Teller, which Gleeson plays the new editor-in-chief, Ned Sampson. Now, we sent our very own truth teller along to quiz him, except they weren't available, so we had to make do with Boyd.
Very good.
Okay, really like that. Yeah, almost too much.
Hey, Donal, how's it going?
Hey, really good. Good to see you. How are you?
And you, yeah, very good. All the better for seeing you.
You charmer.
This is a huge undertaking, isn't it? To star in a American mockumentary sitcom from the people who brought us The Office. I mean, were you daunted at all by that prospect?
I think when I heard about the idea, I definitely was. And you do wonder, like, what are they? Why? What are they doing? But then when I read the script and it was made clear to me that it's not a remake or that you're not playing a version of Michael Scott or David Brent or doing anything, that this is a whole new setup and it's a totally different sort of boss, totally different sort of company. Like, it's about newspapers and journalism. That made me excited about the possibilities. And in that scenario, who else would you want to be doing it with other than Greg Daniels and Michael Komen, who have excelled at mixing those worlds before? So that was my rationale became very different once I heard what the show was about.
And were you a fan of the US Office and the original Office and all of that? Was that something that, you know, you'd engaged with previously?
Yeah, I'd seen a lot of the American Office and always loved it. I'd seen all of the UK Office back when it first aired and then came to the US Office a little bit later, but always thought it was wonderful, but just incredible. and brilliant places to spend your time, you know, that sort of way. And so the hope was with this, we could also build a lovely place to spend some time. You know what I mean? Like that it would be a place you would look forward to going in the same way that the US office was a place you look forward to going.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you, what your character, the new editor in chief of the newspaper, the Toledo Truth Teller, brilliantly named. What did you make of him when you kind of read the scripts and you got involved in taking the role?
I think I loved that he was positive. I think when I don't know if it's just from being Irish or from this side of the pond, but like I often look for the dark humor. That's the sort of stuff that I really love, or the awkward stuff, or the you know, death and just the darker side of stuff. Ned is firmly on the lighter side,
yeah,
or has chosen to be optimistic and is trying to be hopeful and is naturally built that way. And so I actually really liked that it was something different to what I would normally be looking to find. And I that kind of made me really respond to him, that he was hopeful, even though all the odds are like fully stacked against him getting into this type of work. But he thinks it'll make the world a better place, and so he's fully committed. I think that's great. I love that.
Yeah. He's very enthusiastic, isn't he? Like, it's almost like nothing will break him. He's kind of like...
Exactly. And then the fun is finding the thing that will push him right to the edge, like that might actually break him. And how does he respond when all of this enthusiasm is met with his inability to deliver? You know what I mean? Because just reality will sort of intrude on that enthusiasm. And I really like it when he's pushed.
Yeah. And he's surrounded by, I'm trying to use a nice word, but there are a lot of people lacking in knowledge, I'd say. I mean, I could say surrounded by idiots. I don't know. You know, I'm just throwing it out there. But like, do you feel like he's kind of the straight man, isn't he? And yeah, he is funny with himself as well, which is a difficult trick to pull off, I think.
Yeah, no, he definitely is at the straight, kind of like in terms of that thing. He's definitely holding the middle ground. He's the one forging ahead while things fall apart around him. I think Mayer is talented, and I think he sees talent in some of the other journalists or these people who are interested in being journalists. But yes, he's surrounded by sort of like just ticking time bombs, basically, of things that could absolutely explode his best endeavors. And I think that's why it's a comedy, you know?
Yeah. As a representative of the dying print media, which I am, which I'm still working for, as well as doing this podcast, it's quite poignant, the whole thing, isn't it? Because it's right on the button in terms of this is happening right now to a lot of newspapers and magazines that, you know, kind of struggling to find a way to survive.
Yeah, and there's nothing funny about that. I mean, that's like the reality of that is shocking and all the rest of it. The other side of that is that people have been saying print journalism is dead, or that real journalism is dying. People have been saying that since I was in college, and I'm sure we're saying it long before then as well. This is the death of journalism, and journalism has always survived. So I think concentrating through the character on the positivity of still doing it. Yeah. Like when I met journalists getting ready for it, I met loads of young journalists as well as sort of older journalists and talked about what it is to work in print media and all the rest of it. And what I loved was seeing young people hopeful and striving and wanting to make it better. I think that's really, that I find that very hopeful and optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in the middle of all of these kind of Americans, this big American show, did the fact that you've got people like Bemisola Gumelo and Tim Key, was that, you know, kind of united together, you know, as a kind of Anglo-Irish?
Yeah. Well, we were, you know, you're away from home together with those people, and that makes you close. And Bemi, I was new to, but I'm a huge fan of now, and just think she's amazing. And Tim, I'd been a fan of for many, many years, and so it was a real delight to find out that he had been cast and that I'd get to share scenes with him. So yeah, I just think he's amazing in every way. So yeah, between the pair of them, I felt like a nice little group. It was good.
Yeah, because he's Psychic Simon, isn't he? Obviously, and you must have seen The Ballad of Wallace Island, which I think is one of the films of the year, right?
It's super on every level. They just nailed every aspect of that film. I was very, very proud to know him when I saw it.
And I have to ask you before I run out of time, Aston Villa, you're a huge Aston Villa fan. I happen to know. I know very well. What are your feelings about Aston Villa this season?
It's hard to know. it's hard to know. I've only seen the highlights of the Newcastle game, but like, yeah, you just, they've got so many amazing players, but they're up against it with the financial constraints and all the rest of it. Much like the journalism industry here. See the way, look, I'm tying it all together. This is amazing.
Yeah.
But they've been up against it financially. But I think as long as Emery's there, we're in incredible shape. That's such an amazing boost to have over basically everybody else. So I'm optimistic, concerned a little bit as always, but really optimistic because I think they can play amazing football.
Yeah, yeah. And you've kept your kind of squad together pretty much, haven't you? So, you know.
Yeah, well, we've lost a couple and there's not much come in. Like, you know, there's only a couple of players have come in. So, yeah, yeah. But I think they've been up against it financially, apparently. That's the whole thing.
Now you're part of this, of the huge behemoth, if that's the right word, of a big American show like this. Does that mean this could go on for years, right? If it's a hit for Peacock and NBC, etc., is that something you're prepared for? That, you know, this could be, you know, I mean, the Office itself, what 10, 11 seasons, I think, the American version?
Yeah, you only sign up for a few. So you don't sign up for that many. And I think that means everybody's protected because it means that you can choose to go on, they can choose to go on. But like, it will always be how it's received is what will really decide how it goes along. I really hope we get to come back because I think we can make it even better. And I think we can learn from all the stuff that we did before. I'm really hopeful that we come back. So for the moment, I'm just excited about being able to do more if it happens. No part of that is like, you know, an albatross or anything like that. It's all good. Yeah.
And without putting too fine a point on it, it strikes me that I was watching and I was thinking this is such a joy because like the whole sitcom itself is sometimes, you know, Phil, it's possibly like withering away and there are far fewer comedies on TV nowadays than there used to be. I feel like this could be like a rallying cry, you know, to kind of keep sitcoms going because it's such a good example of them.
Oh, well, I'm really happy to hear that. I think that there's something special about a place you can go every week that'll make you laugh. There's something really sort of sacred about that. It's one of the reasons I'm involved in acting at all is because when I was a teenager, sitting down with my family, I mean, that was TV, but to watch whatever was on that week, Friends or then The Office as I got old, Alan Partridge, all that stuff brought us together in the most amazing way. And so, yes, to be part of something that I hope will give that to certain people, like those are the behemoths of the whatever, but to be part of something that has the possibility of bringing people together and laughing, I mean, what greater privilege can you have? So yeah, I hope people like it and I hope we get to go again.
Oh, I hope so as well. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. Well, congratulations, Donal, and hope to see you, you know, in a footballing contest.
How are you feeling about Arsenal?
I'm very optimistic, but we just found out that Kai Havertz, our striker, is injured, got injured again. So we're going to be looking for, you know, a new striker all over again. So yeah, it's...
God, the age-old problem never ends.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, we keep having these injuries. Yeah, so we may be coming in for one of your key players.
You keep your hands off. You leave Watkins alone. He's happy.
I can't guarantee we're going to leave Ollie Watkins alone.
You please leave him alone. We love him.
Before this is just happily turning into a football podcast interview, but... As I stop that, let me say thank you very much, Donal. Hopefully see you soon.
Oh, amazing to talk to you. Yeah, see you again, boys.
That was Donal Leeson, and it's time now for this week's news. And I'm going to kick off by saying Department Q will be back for 2. So Department Q2 is in development, and I'm excited.
Yes, I think that was the least surprising announcement of recommission because it was halfway through the first series, you know, you're thinking, well, this is definitely really good. It's got to be. And what's interesting is Netflix doesn't have many returning shows like that. It doesn't have, you know, it doesn't have a whole load of crime dramas that could come back anytime with a different case. This is the first one they've got for ages. So it makes total sense that it's come.
I think as soon as we met Akram, we knew there was going to be a second series because we need to know what's happening with him at all times.
We do. That's not surprising. What is surprising, they've renewed the Institute. Stephen King's The Institute has been renewed for a second season.
That is surprising.
Yeah, because the book doesn't have a sequel, so they've just said they're going to, it's going to be the characters sort of set free but hunted. New dangers await the escapees from the Institute. And Stephen King's apparently very excited about the money he'll receive from it. No, sorry, very excited about them continuing the story. Ooh. My mistake, misread that.
No, true.
And they've just said, we've been so gratified by the response to our first season, which is a testament to the dedication of fantastic cast and crew, blah, 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 blah. We feel there'll be much more story to tell as our brilliant characters continue to navigate their way, etc., etc. I watched all of the Institute and actually really enjoyed it. So I'm in no way disappointed by this. I thought everyone in it was really good and I thought it was fun. That said, I feel like it ended in a place that I was relatively happy with. I'm not sure we need a second season, but you know, I'll reserve judgment. I'm not opposed to it.
So they don't all die then?
I give them my permission. No, spoiler, they don't all die.
I do want to carry on watching it because when we first watched it, I didn't realise that the main young guy is played by Martin Freeman and Amanda Amington's son, Joe, who was very good in it, right? He's very good in it. So I want to go back and watch. I'm going to go and watch the rest of it. Yeah, it's good.
I wasn't a fan, but no. Sound the Harlan Coben klaxon because there is news of a new series that is heading to our screen soon on Prime Video. It's called Lazarus and it's based on an original story starring Bill Nighy and Sam Claflin. So the little blurb reads, Joel Lazarus Claflin returns home after his father, Dr. Jonathan Lazarus Nighy, dies by suicide and begins to have disturbing experiences that can't be explained. He quickly becomes entangled in a series of cold case murders as he grapples with the mystery of his father's death and his sister's murder 25 years ago. And that will arrive on the 22nd of October. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. I love a Harlan Coben.
Well, what's interesting is this is the first, kind of the first fruit, at least when it comes to adult Harlan Coben, because there have been Prime Video adaptations of his YA stuff. But this is not from a novel, is it? This is an original story. Idea.
And non-Netflix.
And non-Netflix, yeah. Exactly.
Do Netflix then only have rights to the novel adaptations? Like, what's the legalities of it? You're mates with Harlan Boyd.
Yeah,
I think
that's the case. Yeah, I can't remember when we discussed it, where we interviewed him, where you were holding the mic very kindly.
that's right. I was your mic man.
You were. I think that is the case, yeah. I think Netflix buy up the rights to, have bought up the rights to various novels, and he can still, and he's got another deal where he creates stuff for Prime Video. It is extraordinary, really.
Man is printing money.
He's very busy.
I'm excited by the fact that filming has started on series 2 of Death Valley. Do you remember that? That's with Timothy Spall. And they've apparently started filming. No news of when it will be out, but obviously they've only just started. But there was a photo of Spall and his co-star Gwyneth Keyworth, which are with a clapperboard, which is always
That's really
nice
popular.
I really liked it.
People really like that.
There's a huge stuff.
I didn't get on with it particularly, but
For me, it was a bit like Ludwig. You know,
it had the Ludwig vibe. But people, those two shows, old guy solves crimes in a kind of quasi cozy fashion with a nice, you know, visual backdrop or, you know, whatever. People love that. People love that stuff, yeah. So it was inevitable, really.
I had a couple of trailers this week. There'd been a trailer for Fallout Season 2, which made me remember that I don't remember anything about Fallout Season 1 ended, so I need to go back on Wikipedia and find out because I've forgotten everything about that show. Maybe when I go to the Horror House tomorrow night, it will refresh my memory. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
So that was a trailer that went out. I guess I'm interested to see that. I do remember as massive hit Fallout was, which surprised me because I did watch the whole thing, but it was a slog for me. Like, I didn't love it. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what the pacing is for season 2. There was also a trailer for season 2 of The Pit, which will of course mean nothing to those of you who have not.
Stop taunting us! It's so annoying, James.
Who are in the know? For those of us who've seen it, it's very.
God,
you know what's annoying is I did a whole session at the Edinburgh TV Festival I hosted with Sky Bigwigs, and I forgot to ask them.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
Your one job.
Forgot to ask.
We've been banging on about it for like a month, 2 months.
Yeah.
Oh God.
You are The Pit.
Yeah.
Very much so. First look pics of series 2 of Dreaming Whilst Black. I don't know if either of you saw that, but I'm excited for this.
Yeah, we reviewed it on the pod. Okay. Diligently, I believe.
I said yes, we did.
No, I was asking if you saw the pictures, boys, before you jumped down my throat.
See.
Yes.
Yes, I did see the pictures, which is funny because it cast in period costume.
Yes, exactly. And also he was a Jani Sam and was wearing a very nice jumper with clouds on, which I'm going to hopefully interview him soon for the second series. I'm going to ask him where he got it from.
You're going to gratuitously try and steal his jumper?
Oh, yeah. Do you think he'll give it to me?
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, it's something to aim for.
You might if you ask.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those pictures look great and that will be coming soon. Also, some monkey business news. Literally, bad monkey
news.
Yeah, bad monkey news. John Malkovich is joining series 2. Now, this is the Bill Lawrence comedy drama starring Vince Vaughn, if you recall. Do you know what? I had to try 3 times to get into this, but I'm happy I persisted because I really did enjoy it. And with John Malkovich...
This is Bad Monkey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did I call it something else?
No, you were kind of dancing.
No, I just wanted to be sure that I remember the name of the show.
Yes, no, it is Bad Monkey.
Yeah. It's Monkey Business, but it is Bad Monkey.
Yes, yeah. So Malkovich is joining series two, so exciting.
There are also, one of the interesting stories of the week is the first look images for and the premiere date confirmed for the new Monster series from Ryan Murphy of, and this is Ed Gein, I think it's pronounced Gein.
I think it's Gine.
Oh, you think it's Gine?
Is it?
Oh,
no, I always thought it was Gine. But yeah,
unlike you two to take opposite sides.
We were never friends.
No, let's call the whole thing on. Anyway, this is they issued these kind of poster-like images of Ed Gein, played by Charlie Hunnam.
Or Gein.
Or Gein, exactly. or Charlie Hunnam.
Charlie Hunnam.
Exactly. And it's quite interesting because they've been quite controversial already. I mean, this whole strand that Ryan Murphy's created of telling the stories of true life serial killers through the medium of quite, shall we say, I don't know, over the top classic Ryan Murphy style storytelling and dramatization. And the posters literally say stuff like they quote Psycho and the Science of the Lambs and these other films that have been based loosely on the actual real case of Ed Gein Gein. And it does leave a slightly, I do feel guilty for being as interested in this show as they've made me interested in it via the use of these images. You know, I will, there's no way I'm not going to watch this show, but at the same time, I do feel there is something inherently tacky and questionable about the whole thing. It's an ick situation. But the cast of
this
thing
gives me the ick.
Gives us the ick. But listen, this is the cast of this show, right? The Ed Gein story, Gein's Gein. Tom Hollander, Vicky Creeps, Olivia Williams, Leslie Manville. Look, just loads of really good actors happy to do these shows. And these are smart, intelligent people. And, you know, it's I find the whole thing fascinating, the whole world of the Ryan Murphy serial killer drama.
But we've had this a little bit recently with the Amanda Knox thing. Do you remember? We were like... in terms of... great cast.
Co-created and produced by one of the people involved in the story. This is just effectively exploiting these incredible stories of serial killers for TV entertainment, for our entertainment.
I meant more that, you know, like a esteemed cast willing to sign up.
Oh, and it was... And do you know what? But why I totally agree with you is that series could have been made by Ryan Murphy. It was so over the top and, frankly, you know, kind of almost kitschy, which is very much his wheelhouse. So, yeah, I know what you're saying.
I'm going to call it on news here just because you're running rapidly. Well, I'm running out of time. You two aren't running out of time. You've got loads of time. But I'm running out of time. So I'm going to move us on to this week's reviews. And we're going to begin with The Guest on BBC One. And this is a show that I feel confident in saying will score reasonably high on Kay's cuckoo bongometer. So this is set and filmed in Wales. It's a four-part psychological thriller and sees a young woman called Rhea, played by Gabrielle Creevy, get a job as a cleaner for a wealthy businesswoman played by Eve Miles. And their relationship, I think it's fair to say, takes a turn for the toxic. And if you think you know where this is going by the time someone is getting lipstick smeared across their lips, let me tell you that you absolutely do not. Kay, please open this particular packet of banana crackers for us.
So as you know, I love Eve Miles and I'll watch anything that she's in. And she is brilliant in the role of Fran, who is this sort of very successful, charismatic businesswoman who employs Rhea, Gabrielle Creevy's character, as her cleaner. And they come from very different backgrounds. They've both had humble backgrounds, but the point of it is that Fran's elevated through her business and she's living a life that Rhea really would like to if she considered it, but she doesn't have that headspace because she's trying to make ends meet. She's got a good-for-nothing boyfriend who's just a gamer, makes no effort to get a job. Anyway, so she is employed by Fran to clean her house, and over time, Fran begins to make her see that actually there's so much more to her life, that she could have all the things that Fran has, and that she's got so much untapped potential. And they cultivate this sort of toxic friendship, which is an unusual dynamic. I'm quite intrigued by this dynamic, but I think what James is basically referring to is that, suffice to say, Fran gives Rhea some advice, which she acts upon, and the consequences of which are absolutely banana crackers. because it goes off on in a direction that you wouldn't expect. Very melodramatic, extreme. But do you know what? Like I said, I'll watch anything that Eve's in. And so it is bonkers. And the first episode's, certainly confirms that it does potentially belong on the batshitometer that I'm creating. But I don't know. I enjoy it. It's just entertaining. It joins those that spate of shows that go off in random tangents and are a little bit mad, but are
it's such a spate. It's not just a spate of that. Yeah. It's a spate of female-led thrillers with two women battling each other.
Hostage.
Sirens. Do you remember Sirens?
Oh, yeah. I like Sirens.
Do you remember the
Behind Her Eyes?
Behind Her Eyes. The Better Sister. Mm-hmm. Do you remember The Stolen Girl? Do you remember The Au Pair? These are all women against women. Little Disasters. The way, the ones I've just listed are just this year alone. And you've got coming up The Girlfriend, which mm-hmm. we'll be doing next week, hopefully, embargoes.
Embargoes.
It's a flood. It's a veritable flood of these shows about women, at least one of whom, if not both, are psychotic.
And do you know what? I'm here for it.
I'm saying, completely. I love
I'm
them.
Here for this
and
mad
I have
shit.
To say, I have to say, this one starts out quite soberly and almost quite kind of...
It lures you in.
It lures you in, and you think, this is all fair enough. And I actually was watching it thinking, this is actually plausible. And it's quite kind of, it's not particularly flashily made or, it's kind of very, very solid, good entertainment. And an interesting story, as you say, that main, the two of them having an interest. There's one bit where she's applying the makeup and it's like you have very beautiful lips from the Mike Lee play with Alison Steadman. Thingy's Party, what was it called?
Abigail's Party,
thank you. Anyway, then the ending happens, right? And the climax
gear shift
of episode one, I think it makes the whole show even more batshit crazy than all those others. I think this is now...
Really? No, Boyd.
No.
Let me consult the batshitometer.
No, you have to think about it. Because if you think about it, you're going, wait a minute, so she did that? Why did she do that? Why did she decide to do that? Why did he decide to do this? And if you think about it for more than half a millisecond, it is more insane.
Not more insane than Smoke.
I think it's more insane than Smoke.
You're more insane than Smoke.
Fucking nuts.
You are fucking nuts. But that is crazy. You can't say that.
I'm
James,
fully
come on
board.
Tell me.
I'm fully on board. But the
am I the arbiter of
cuckoo
yes,
bong?
Come on. Yeah, come on.
Cuckoo bong to the max.
James, come on. Do you think this is more mad than Smoke?
I might not think it's quite as mad as Smoke, but it is definitely mad.
Yeah, it's up there.
Like, I totally get what Boyd is saying. And he's right. Like, it is in this sort of grand tradition of these absolutely batshit, sort of weird, sort of female relationship, often cross-generational female relationships, sort of like weird dueling dramas, these psycho thrillers. It's just a lot of fun. All of this whole genre is just immense, pulpy, ridiculous, stupid fun.
I'm so happy you think it's fun. I thought you were going to get all highbrow and like snooty magooty about it.
No, not at all. I had a really good time with it. you can never be snooty magooty about Cuckoo Bong. It's batshit. It's absolutely batshit. And I was giggling away watching it. It's like, what the fuck is
going on? I actually rewound the last scene because I wanted to watch it again instantly. And it's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So
but those two are immensely watchable, right? Because I've always
very
loved Eve Miles, but even Gabrielle Creevey.
Oh, no, she's brilliant.
She's
actually, one of the things that is so good about it is she's very naturalistic.
Mm.
And that really helps that helps.
It grounds it in the madness.
grounds the madness. So that when the madness arrives, it's even more
brilliant.
Listen,
when I'm back from my holiday, I really mean it. I am going to make a barometer for us.
Good.
Because there's a lot now to add to it.
You can chart the constellation of...
Yeah, I'm going to get my felt tips and cardboard out.
Yeah.
Stand by.
That seems fair. When's this on, Boydie?
This is on Monday, today, the 1st of September, 2025, BBC One, 9 p.m. And I think the whole thing is on iPlayer as well. And I personally am going to devour it as soon as I get home tonight.
We should get Darren to create some kind of cuckoo bong gong. The cuckoo bong gong every time something is cuckoo bong.
Yes, please, Darren. Yes, I'm here for that. Yeah. Dong. I really want to hear the vibrations of it as well.
Yeah. It's either that or take a hit from the cuckoo bong, and I think that would just be inappropriate.
So no, come on, just right, say okay. No.
Next week, we have I Fought the Law on ITV1. This is another four-part sort of drama, but this has a very different tone because it's the story of Julie Hogg, who was murdered in 1989 by a violent serial offender who was ultimately acquitted of the crime. Now, that obviously sounds like a spoiler for this, but the point of this series is it follows this kind of relentless campaign by her mother, Anne Ming, who fought to have this 800-year-old law, this double jeopardy law, meaning people can't be tried for the same crime twice, overturned, which it was famously, so her daughter's killer could finally be brought to justice. And this, I must, you know, I've got to say, I found an incredibly difficult watch. Like, it's really, really just profoundly sad and profoundly upsetting. Like, obviously, it's a Sheridan Smith crime thing on ITV. So, you know, I was prepared to come in with a bit of snoot, but that was dispelled instantly, because this is actually really, really hard hitting. But boydie, this Fought the Law, crucially, did the law win?
The law did win, yeah, or at least in the show.
Well, famously didn't, in fact, in the courts. But
well,
you set him up for a fall there, James.
Well, the law was changed.
I did, it's true.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that is true.
The law was at least changed due to this extraordinary woman, Anne Ming's diligence and the
perseverance,
power.
Perseverance, right? And never giving up. Yeah.
Years and years and years it took. But you're right, it is. But you know what? This, as you say, this four-part show, it reminded me a lot of the Mr. Bates versus the Post Office and Toxic Town, in that they're campaigning shows, showing you what people can achieve if they absolutely stick with what they're doing, and if they single-mindedly. And in this case, the real Anne Ming, who's very much still with us and was consulted throughout the whole creation of the show, the script writing stage, etc., spoke to Sheridan Smith a lot. And it's all about, you know, she talks about how she annoyed, you know, people in her own life, you know, her husband to some extent got frustrated with her. And, you know, the police and the law and the lawmakers and the politicians, because she wouldn't give it up. She wouldn't let it lie. But that is, and so in the end, there's something inspirational about it, mm-hmm. because as James alludes to, the actual murder element of it that has to be dealt with first, because you have to know what happened, because it is really grim and moving and startling, how, you know, her mother found the body, etc., all of that, which is all in there, obviously.
It sets the emotional stakes, doesn't
it? Yeah, it really sets the emotional stakes, so that when you get to the stuff that happens in court, that's devastating initially, but then, by, you know, if you watch the whole series and then it explains why, you know, this guy got acquitted due to various reasons and various flaws in the law, and then when you get to her dealing with this 800-year-old double jeopardy thing, it is just extraordinary and fascinating. And it's a story, I kind of knew the edges of this story, but I didn't really, but I definitely didn't know the detail. And it's the detail that makes it so fascinating. And I just think it's up there with those brilliant shows. And I think, you know, the way it's written, adapted by Jamie Crichton, adapted by from Anne Ming's own book, For the Love of Julie, the way it's directed, the way it's acted, it just feels so authentic and real. It's very, very well judged. I thought it was excellent. Mm.
And Sheridan's performance, excellent phenomenal. As always, right? Yeah. These gritty roles based on real life, the fact that she consulted with Anne Ming, and Anne Ming was, you know, she's delighted with Sheridan's performance. She said it was very hard to watch because it felt like Sheridan had got into her mind because she, you know, it was so accurate a portrayal. And yeah, it's heartbreaking and devastating to watch. And of course, it's like distressing because it's a mother's love. Her, the whole family, how they are moved by this tragedy. But so inspiring that in spite of her pain, you know, she found purpose in that, i.e., not just to get justice for Julie, which is obviously at the centre of all of this, but for the future, the people that were to come, for, you know, like other cases that would be affected by this rule, this 800-year-old rule being changed, historic legal reform because of this one woman. And she should be celebrated, even though it's in incredibly sad and tragic circumstances.
And such a crucial thing to change given the sort of the time frame that we're in, because we're in an age where new evidence, because of forensic advances and whatnot, comes to light all the time. And then if someone has been acquitted, but then suddenly they are clearly guilty, not naming any names, but let's just say there was a very famous murder case in America where the person who may or may not have killed the person then pretty much admitted they did it after they'd been acquitted, and nothing could be done about it. It's like, that's clearly a massive miscarriage of justice.
And this guy boasted about having done it after he
was that. Do you know what he... I got confused about how it came to light, because I thought he was in prison when he admitted to it. But apparently, according to Anne Ming, he was in a, she says, this man killed my daughter and was bragging in a local pub that you got away with a perfect murder.
Yeah, great.
Horrific.
She's very difficult to watch, but
friend of the pod, Rufus Jones, pops up as well.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning.
Is he,
and it comes back.
Attorney General.
He's something like that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Some bigwig. But I love that bit actually, because he sort of says to her, because it's in, I think that bit was in 2003 and they were the House of Lords, and he was sort of was saying to her, have you got notes? You know, because, you know, people often dry up. And she was just like, listen, I know what I want to say. I've had 13 years to think about it. And I loved that moment. Yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's great. And this is ITV1, isn't it, Boydie?
Yeah, started yesterday, Sunday, and carries on today, Monday, and it'll be Sunday, Monday next week as well. And there's a documentary about the real case next week.
Which ITV do a lot, which I think is great.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, right. Finally this week, we have The Runarounds on Prime Video, which has been dubbed an original musical teen drama series that sees a group of recent high school graduates start a rock band to chase their musical dreams. At least, that is what Google told me. I wouldn't know, seeing as I was never sent screeners for it and was generally given The Runaround instead of, you know, The Runarounds. Still, I'm A, hoping one of you, at least one of you has seen it, but also, I have to go now. I've run out of time because I have to go and catch a boat to Epic Universe, which is a new park here at Universal where I can ride my roller coasters all day, which is, of course, clearly essential business for the podcast.
This
is
outrageous.
Have a lovely time. We'll be fine. We'll do the runarounds.
Do you know what? You know, yeah. I was joking last episode about having to call like the podcast social service about being abandoned and neglected by James. Yeah, but I mean, this is a perfect. Exactly. We've now got audio evidence of this. But anyway, all right. Well, have a nice time.
Anyway,
off you pop.
I will. I'll scream. I'll scream to you from the roller coaster.
We need footage, right? We need footage for Instagram, please.
I'm going to spend the rest of this podcast impersonating James.
Oh yes,
that's
brilliant.
Fine. Do it. Be as smug as you possibly can. James out.
Right, now that he's buggered off to go on a roller coaster, what did you think of it?
Of the runaround?
Yes.
I quite enjoyed it, basically, in the end. I was not looking forward to watching this show at all. It's co-created by the guy who wrote Outer Banks, which is a very
Jonas Pate.
There you go.
Was it Jonas Pate? I'd like
I don't think it's Pate.
No, I'm joking. That's one name I can get right.
He has not got an accent on his E. It's not. That would be great if it was Jonas Pate.
I would love it.
Can you get a slice of pate? No. He created. Have you ever seen Outer Banks? It's a very, very glossy, slick teen thing populated by unfeasibly beautiful people.
No, I haven't. But my niece is really into this. So when I watched this, I texted her and said, listen, get ready for this because I think she'll really like
it. Did you watch it with her? Or,
No.
Because there's a lot of adults. There's a lot of adult situation.
No, and also, also that would have been illegal, Boyd, because as you know, these screeners are very top secret.
Exactly.
I'm about to go on holiday with her tomorrow, and I'm going to tell her all about it because I texted her.
Would you let her watch it, though? I actually am fascinated by this because this is a teen drama, which back in the day, you know, say in the day of Dawson's Creek or the OC or whatever, would have been much more anodyne. This has got MFing and effing and Jeffing all
just
the
language
way through.
Stuff. Is that what you're getting prudish about?
There's drug action as well.
How easily
we forget? Oh my God, you're like, oh, whatever. Crack the bong open or whatever, you know.
Crack the bong open.
You're fine with it.
You're cookie bong. By that. No, I didn't find it like anything that I would say to her, oh no, you shouldn't watch this. I mean, to be fair, listen, this is the girl who watches Strange Things and Euphoria. I mean, like...
Oh, Euphoria. Oh,
yeah.
Frankly inappropriate. You should be staging an intervention.
I don't like to get involved. So anyway, I actually really enjoyed this. I was also a little bit dreading it because I thought, oh, you know, is it going to be too young? It is young. Look, it's not aimed at me. However, I know that my teenage self would have absolutely lapped this up because even actually as an adult now, I was watching, I was like, it's fun. It's entertaining. It's got, you know, we should say it's about a group, a band who actually I think featured in Outer Banks. So I read up a little bit about this and this band, The Runarounds, I think they formed to audition for Outer Banks Series 3. And then Jonas Pate created this drama around the band. And so they are real musicians, they are a real band. And so this is a dramatization of them because some of them are actors, I think, William Lipton, for example. It's just like, I think it's fun. It's, you know, there's romance drama, friendship drama, you know, some of the band members are deciding if they will go to, is it college? Some of them I think he'll be dropping out. There's like, there's like all this kind of like angst, teenage angst and drama about it. And obviously the cast are good looking. Yeah, I thought it was fun. And I think definitely teenagers will like it. And anyone who likes, what's it called? The Summer I Turned Pretty and things like that, which are very glossy and American.
We did one recently that I can't remember the name of, the one, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah, we did. Okay. And we also did Cruel Intentions. Remember that?
Yes.
On Prime Video.
I think this is better than that. Right?
This is 100% better. I mean, it's like, it could not be, I mean, it's just...
This is superior. And
way, way, way superior.
Also, I was concerned when I went into this, I thought, oh God, it's going to be super cheesy. And you know, I've had my fill of cheese recently with, was it The Terminal List? This isn't, you know, there's a couple of moments that are a little bit, you know, close to the cheese wire, shall we say. But overall,
You like your cheese metaphor, don't you? Right.
You admitted The Terminal List was just the Grand Fromage. It was, fondue, as I said.
But there are scenes in this where, I mean, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. There are scenes in this which go on way too long, which are basically two bros, kind of like, you know, swearing at each other. There's a scene, I'm going to call it the Rock God's Motherfucker scene. Where they literally, these two guys literally shout Rock God's Motherfucker at each other for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
At least felt like 10 minutes.
But you have no objection to doing that when it's us doing that chant before we record a podcast.
Oh, well, that's different.
Motherfuckers, when we're shouting that out, screaming together as a rallying cry.
Yeah, we have to get ourselves excited.
Psyched up.
Psyched up, that's fine. Especially when James is away.
You just don't like it when it's in a drama.
No, that's true.
Okay.
No, I did enjoy it. So I was very surprised at the extent to which I enjoyed it. I thought it was, it had a sense of humour that was not forced or embarrassing or too cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the key to it, that, for example, a lot of the storyline, this is going to sound really banal, but a lot of the storyline in the first episode is to do with the drummer and whether or not they're going to keep the drummer or not.
Yeah.
A la Ringo Starr in the creation of the Beatles, of course. I think that's going back to those days, famously. They got rid of their drummer to bring in Pete Best, to bring in Ringo, quite rightly. And in this one, the drummer is just a shit drummer. I mean, he's just awful. And there's a funny scene where they do a cover version of... I want to say a White Stripes song, I think.
Perhaps.
And it's that kind of music, by the way, that they play. So they're not playing bland, banal. Remember the OC back in the day?
Are you coming for Imogen Heap and the OC soundtrack?
A little bit. This is more like, you know, that kind of stuff, like Nirvana. It's kind of more grungy, more rocky, more guitar-based stuff that they do. And they do their own songs as well. And I thought that was a good... I thought the music was pretty decent. You know, for this kind of show, he says slightly patronizingly. All the stuff about the band and whether to sack the drummer or not, I thought was very well done and quite funny, because the character who played the drummer character is an absolute gigantic doofus.
Like the element with the guitarist who has anxiety and is a bit shy.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was very sweet.
Yeah,
that
was good. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So.
I think the romance is a bit, it's like, come on, just get on with it. You know, it's one of those where it's like, will they, won't they? And they so obviously will, that to stretch it. I know that's the formula of these shows, and almost they have to do it. But equally, it would be like, wouldn't it be refreshing if she just goes, yeah, let's just, you know.
I think the thing that saves that is actually William Lipton. So that's the guy who's trying to pursue this girl.
Yeah.
Because he does it in a variety of different ways that are quite amusing.
Yeah,
and he's quite, you know, determined.
He's very
in a consensual way.
Steady, you hasten to add.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. It's really fun.
Yeah.
All I would say, and that there's a couple, as well as that scene I was talking about, which goes on too long, they do, I surprisingly actually, they do a full performance of a song towards the end. And I'm like, it's like a 5 minute song.
Yeah, I could live without the full version.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not sure we need that. When you consider that, I've seen lots of shows where they'll have, you know, needle drops songs, right, accompanying, I don't know, a sequence or a montage, right? That happens in The Bear, for example. And even in The Bear, they'll only play like half the song and then they'll, you know, cut to the scene. And I'm talking about classic songs that are featured in those shows. To have a kind of 4 or 5 minute full performance of I think it's a new song, was quite a lot, I thought. And I think in general it was a bit windy. It was a bit kind of like, you know, went on a bit.
No wind instruments there, Boyd, eh?
No wind instruments in that way. But I enjoyed it, and you know, if I have the time I might actually go back to it.
How I feel. Do you know what? It's on my long list. I mean, there's things that take priority. But if I just wanted an easy watch, this is definitely one I'd go back to.
I think it's a very while it hasn't particularly got any great dramatic tension that unlike The Guest, right? At the end of The Guest, when that infamously cuckoo bong scene happens, and you're like, oh my God, I've got to see what happens next. There's nothing in this to warrant you going, oh, I have to see what happens next.
No, invested the romance and stuff
well,
like that.
That's painting the obvious what's going on there. Apart from, the only thing that is keeping you watching for me is that it's a kind of hang out with these characters who are fun.
Yeah.
And it's a fun vibe, man. That's what I'm saying.
You said it.
Yeah. That's The Runaround, Kay.
Yes.
Prime Video, starting today, Monday the 1st of September, 2025.
Wonderful.
Do you want to know what else is on this week?
Yeah, tell me.
Let me just have a look.
Scrunch through those pages now that James is not here to worry about the audio.
Exactly. So we've got the paper, the aforementioned paper that I interviewed Donald Gleeson for. He is the lead in this show set in the same universe as The American Office. And that starts on Sky Max and now on Friday, the 5th of September, 9 o'clock, 2025. It's worth saying that and this is reality TV, but James isn't here.
Yeah.
The Inheritance started last night, carries on tonight. And this is the show that's very much
about Cuckoo Bong.
Cuckoo Bong format. It's very much like The Traitors, except their fictional character played by Elizabeth Hurley is dead, and the real life competitors are competing to win money from her estate. And it is Cuckoo Bong, but quite entertaining. Rob Brinder is like the kind of host slash he's
the executor.
He's the executor. Thanks very much. Yes, I think we mentioned Michelin Web, Channel 4 Friday. Bake Off starts on Tuesday, Channel 4.
Get on it, everyone.
Get on it, 8 o'clock, which you wouldn't be allowed to say if James was here. And I think, I'm just checking, flicking through the magazine, as I do. Oh, well, there's The Stranded on Honeymoon Island, which is another reality show hosted by Davina. I'm only mentioning it because it's Davina and we like Davina.
Yeah.
And that is about
Friend
it.
Friend of the
yeah.
pod.
That is about it, yeah.
So, what's your pick of the week?
Oh, it's got to be The Guest, doesn't it?
I'm going to go I Fought the Law because I think of the importance of it and
you know
the performances.
Right. I momentarily forgot that we just reviewed I Fought the Law.
But if you just want an easy watch, a wackadoodle-doo watch, then I would definitely go for The Guest. But I think,
yeah.
I want to champion the I Fought the Law.
Cuckoo Bong, light relief, The Guest.
Yes.
I mean, even though actually it has quite, you know, intense situations in it and absolute important and very good drama, I Fought the Law. I've changed my mind. It's just I Fought the Law.
Yeah.
That's the pick of the week.
He's done a reverse ferret, guys.
Yep. Sometimes you just got to reverse that ferret, guys.
What a way to end. Oh, how does he end this? Go on, over to you, Boydo.
He goes something like, next week you'll talk about what we might be reviewing next week. I can deal with that. The aforementioned Girlfriend, which is the Robin Wright drama, of which you're intimately aware.
Yes,
know, Kay.
I am.
I don't know whether it's embargoed or not. It probably is embargoed. Task, which is the new Sky Atlantic HBO show, which is a very interesting, from the guy who created Mayor of Easttown.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we can review that. I don't think that is embargoed, so that will definitely do. The Rumour is a Channel 5 show with Rachel Shenter that we might end up doing because there's nothing else on. Only Murders in the Building, new series, the fifth season, Kay, believe it or not.
I'm excited because it sounds good. We did a news story on it and sounded
like
it's
a couple of episodes already, FYI.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I'm not going to say that. That'd be breaking all the rules. Okay. You know we can't say that. The Newsreader, do you remember a review?
Yes.
Yeah, which is a really good show.
I really
show.
Like
Australian,
this Australian
newsroom
drama.
Exactly. It's actually one of the most probably underrated shows.
Is that Series 3?
This is Series 3, and there's something called Playing Gracie Darling on Paramount Plus, which is like a kind of crimey show about a girl who disappeared doing a seance.
Yeah,
and then years later, the kind of people who knew her are doing their own dodgy stuff. That's an inane description of what that show is. Anyway, one or more, some or more of those shows we will sure review next week. And it'll be a reunion, won't it? Because I think you'll be back from your jaunt to Malaga, hopefully.
Yeah.
James will be back for his outrageous freebie to Universal Studios in Florida. And we'll all be back in the same place. Thank God we don't have
group
to...
group cuddle, guys.
Tear our hair out about the fucking technical problems of this that we had before this podcast started.
Anyway, it's done and dusted now. We can relax.
And we'll just say goodbye in the way James does. Pilot out.